another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. I always title these shows for purposes of my postings, but I usually don't say what those titles are. This time, it's different. I'm going to just say what my title is. Here I am, Lord. Lead me. Don't let me go. And it'll be a couple of episodes, maybe two or three, about the Ignatian retreat that I went on between July the 23rd and July 31st, a month nearly ago. Except for those, quote, lost years between 1970 and 1983 and my baby booming lapse, I've been a Catholic all my life. The years between kindergarten and lapse as a teenager were my introductions to the faith. In my very young years, before the denouement of the Second Vatican Council, it was all pretty much rote stuff. The foundation was the Baltimore Catechism, a small blue book, soft cover if I remember, and it had a question and answer method of transmitting the essence of faith to a child. Why did God make us? I might not get this exactly quoted, but he made us to know him, to love him, and to serve him in this life so that we could be with him in the next. That's the one that stuck with me. What did it all mean to me? I knew it was serious stuff, but I was a child, and it is the rare child, perhaps a Jacinta or a Francisco or a Lucia, who incorporates the substance with the seriousness, and I was not a rare child. And then church history, along with secular history, hit an air pocket of sorts that blew out a window and sucked everything we had known out with it. That may not have been the intention, but that's what happened. Depending on who you talk to, though, these days, and even then, whether that moral tornado was intentionally produced or accidentally produced is still debated. One thing I experienced personally, and I don't think I was alone, was that whatever the intention of those who participated in Vatican II, and while in fact dogma and doctrine promulgated by tradition and the magisterium had not changed, something key got lost in the translation from Rome to the Bronx and places in between. Perhaps coincidentally, perhaps not, by 1970, when the liturgical reality of Vatican II, the Novus Ordo, was fully in place, I was gone as a practicing Catholic. I had stopped going to Mass and participating in any of the sacraments applicable to me. I was one of those folks who would probably have said, I'm Catholic, just not practicing. It was kind of a not well thought out moratorium. It was emotional. It was psychological. I was Catholic adjacent insofar as I finished high school in a Catholic school. I went to a Catholic college and a Catholic law school where, in those days, no one really expected you to be Catholic, and certainly not needing to adhere to all that the church teaches. Well, that part was kind of only implicit, you know. The law de jure said one thing, and was still, as it were, quote, on the books, but de facto, it was a bit of a smorgasbord. I wasn't leading a wild life, in fact, the farthest thing from it. But I had some intense struggles of my own, but I was nothing more than a cultural Catholic. Did I think about coming back? Often. But the thought would pass, and I was at the beginning of ordinary life, and I had other things to contend with. And though intellectually I might have recognized that being a Catholic is supposed to extend into one's daily life, that thought was not integrated into my being. It was something of a factoid. I had brown hair, brown eyes, was from the Bronx, and oh yeah, I was baptized Catholic and went to all Catholic school. When I came back in 1983, I actually did not participate any more than attending Mass on Sunday. I did not receive communion because I knew from my rote training and my fear of just punishment, which had stuck, that I was not in a state to do so, spiritually, so wise. I was also not eager to go to confession. So for 3 years I just attended to see if I would stick with it, or would be distracted away, or find something or another I could object to that would allow a rationalization of why I didn't stay again. Ultimately, by 1986 or 7, I had decided to, well, rejoin the church militant officially. For all my education, I really did not know much about my own faith. I did a lot of peripatetic reading over the years thereafter. I realized that there was so much out there that explored the theology, the philosophy, and the dynamic life of a Catholic, if one committed to that life. Over the many years since, I have become active in one parish in which I have remained, a small, reverent one. I mean, really active. At one point, I even thought about and began a master's program in theology, but at an age by then in which the idea of school and grades grated on me, I decided that I preferred my more free-form, autodidactic approach. I had been on a few retreats over the years, short weekend ones, and I had recognized that something more is required to be a Catholic than what I had been doing for the last, let's see, well, now it's nearly 40 years since my reversion. Actually, not something more to do, but something more to be inculcated into my very essence about who we are and what we are to be as Catholics. It all frankly went back to that catechism question. Why did God create me? To know him, to love him, to serve him in this life, so that I can be with him in the next. Simple, but not. First, you have to believe that God created you, me. I do believe that with a certainty that I cannot express. I know others cannot say that. And there is nothing I can do to persuade them if they are determined not to be persuaded. I could point to what is around all of us right now, what a world without a God looks like. But there are some who would say that the world looks mighty fine to them as it is. So, for the purposes of talking about my recent retreat and what caused me to go on it, I have to assume that those listening believe they were created by God and believe that without him, we are orphans in a perpetual storm. So the question for the rest of us is, do we want to be with him, restored to original holiness, lost by the sin of Adam and Eve? And if so, it sure looks like the best way is to know him, to love him, and to serve him to get that all back. The glimpses of paradise that we get in between the mishigas of life, the craziness, the anger, the sickness, the death, ought to be stirring us on, making us more inclined to know him because he is our ticket back to paradise. And he made it so by doing something that is utterly extraordinary. God became a creature, lived among us, was exposed to all the hardships of life, and then some, was killed by other creatures, resurrected, and then as God and man returned to the Godhead, where he is until he comes again, and yet he has not left us. And then he said, "Follow me. I have made it possible for you to have paradise again. Follow me. Follow me by giving me love in response to my unending love for you. Not in need. He needs no love from us. But in a paradox, our loving him back gives us the most beautiful ever thing for eternity. See, I know all this. I know it intellectually. I believe it intellectually, but I have sensed for a long time that something has been missing in my participation in the life of Christ, in my cooperation, which mostly has been at my convenience, despite my activity in my parish, and whatever else that I might do that seems to be in accord with God's will, probably is, but I have a lot of my will involved in it. We all have struggles with relationship, with love, if you will, in matters of the earth, but having them with matters of salvation, that seems even more critical, and that's what it has seemed to me for a long time. I had some spiritual direction a few years ago, but something wasn't right. Ultimately, I've come to see that it was in me, that I wasn't ready, that I was staying in my head. By no means am I saying that I'm any kind of intellectual, but I prefer keeping things theoretical and at a distance. That's true in my daily life. It appears to be even more true in my spiritual life. I call it reflexive, but I'm not sure that's what it is. And of late, the gap in my spiritual life was a bit of, not an urgency exactly, though when you get to my age, getting key things done is close to an urgency. But it surely is a nagging awareness. Some few months before this last Easter, I had run across a small order of priests who run a parish in Hawaiian Gardens, in particular a priest named Ed Broom, and I heard one of his meditations online at an Ignatian retreat. Ignatius was a nobleman and soldier born in the 15th century and died in the 16th, who, after being injured seriously in a battle and while recovering, discovered his Catholic faith and structured ultimately a spiritual exercise designed to bring a retreatant closer to God, face to face, as it were, and so to live a truly holy life. I always hear a line in the Battle Hymn of the Republic when I talk about this stuff or even think about it, which I think goes, "As he," meaning God, "came to make men holy, let us strive to make men free." It may turn out, it does turn out, that our freedom rests on our achievement of holiness with grace. We lost our original holiness in the garden, and the whole of his plan is to make us holy again so that we can go back to what was intended for us all along, and which the poor exercise of our free will destroyed. I've heard people say, in a kind of jest, but a scary jest, "I'm probably going to go to hell." I always wonder, do they have any idea what they are saying? If they think this world is hard, can you imagine being utterly bereft, separated from friends and family, and in particular, God, forever, and no second chance? It is, as we stand right now, a second chance. Right now, we do have the second chance before any kind of hell. Even the angels who said no didn't get that. Adam and Eve, they had the first chance. They had God as their walking companion. And then they said to him, no. And then what happens? God utters his word, and the word becomes Jesus Christ. And the consequence of death, while still present to be endured, is transformed into a potential return to eternal life. The key to its fruition, the words and action of yes. Here I am, Lord. What is it that you want of me? With your grace, I shall do it. Easy? Not even slightly. And so, anything that can help in focusing my distracted and preoccupied self to take that offer to cooperate, to get back and stay on track to union with God, well, I guess the time has come, or had come, and I wanted to explore it. So, before and through Easter, this parish in Hawaiian Gardens had a 10-week retreat that was also online for those of us who couldn't be in the church for the weekly conference, using the adapted and copyrighted format of Father Broom and the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. By the way, you can find a lot of the conferences, the meditations by the priests on YouTube, and also there is another oblate named Father Tim Gallagher, who also talks about the Ignatian exercises and focuses a large part on something that is part of the retreat called the Rules of Discernment, how we all get into periods of desolation and consolation, and how to recognize those periods and deal with them with God's help. That's an aside, but there are so many tools for us Catholics trying to lead a holy life in the midst of every force that could dissuade us, happily used in and by the devil's workshop. So, every Sunday after Mass, in this 10-week program online, I would follow the outline they provided, having listened to the online conference of points to be considered and prayed on, and I kept a notebook of meditations and thoughts and contemplation based on the biblical readings assigned. I stuck with it, imperfectly, naturally, but by the end, I realized that one day I would like to experience an actual in-person retreat. There are limits to what one can do by oneself. The Ignatian exercises are meant to be done in 30 days, but it's a rare person who has the time or ability to go away for 30 days. Retired that I am, I figured that if available, I might be able to do an 8-day version. I might. I can barely sit in one place for more than 15 minutes, so an 8-day retreat of prayer and meditation was a daunting idea. But not long after the online retreat, and for the first time in 3 years and the COVID lockdown, a local retreat house in Alhambra, the Sacred Heart Retreat House, arranged through that same parish that had done the online retreat with Father Broom to conduct an in-person 8-day silent Ignatian retreat. And I signed up right away. I was very, very eager at first. But as the day for leaving my apartment and staying 8 whole days, actually it was more like 9, away from my regular life here, with various ordinary things popping around me that could become problems, and having to have my cats taken care of, one of whom had just been diagnosed with hyperthyroidism, he's 18 years old, I was finding myself less eager and at points utterly disinclined. My cat-sitting friend came over to do a little bit of reconnaissance with my beautiful boy, and of course he hid, and during the time she would come twice a day, she might see him, but he would be darting away, so she could never get close to give him the necessary medication. My vet said that that wasn't ideal, but he'd survive. An elderly friend, nearly 99, had had a crisis just a week or two before, and I was worried about being out of touch, though I had informed the necessary people, and I would have my phone with me for only emergency use. All the usual negative thoughts began to pile in. What's the point of this? It's just an escape. What are you trying to achieve? And then just a free-floating anxiety that tends to be common to me. It was rather the way I feel when I'm compelled to take an airplane trip. I really hate flying. I'm just on the tippy edge of a phobia, but I have been able over the years to force myself from time to time. But the feeling I was having, it was that feeling, and I was only going by car about 25 miles away, if not less. My gut churned as I packed my bag, and when I started to drive, I was even more anxious, peculiarly almost on the edge of tears, which interestingly happened quite a few times during the actual retreat, and I wanted just to turn around and go home. I can do my spiritual work alone, I told myself, and this time, all of this, and I wasn't even in an airplane where I couldn't turn around. Here, I could turn around. I told myself, you made the commitment. You're going to stick with it. I can't say that always works, but it did this time. I kept driving towards Alhambra, and having pulled into the lot and parked my car, there I stayed from the afternoon of July 23rd until the afternoon of July 31st. There are many lovely retreat houses in California, but this one, the first one I ever went to way back in 1987 for a weekend silent retreat, so just a day and a half, 2 days and a half, maybe, has always been my favorite, though I had actually never been back there for an overnight retreat. I'd been to some day retreats on the other side, the St. Joseph campus, and I kept telling myself that one day I'd do an official retreat overnight again. And now, here I was. It's not a huge place, about 3 acres in a beautiful residential neighborhood just down the street from Teresa of Avila Church. The center is its chapel. On the entrance of the chapel, reminding us of the sisters, the Carmelites, who live here in the cloister all their lives, is the phrase, quote, "My eyes and my heart will remain here forever," end quote. Day in and day out, though they're not only contemplative, many are active in the community, especially in health care. They pray for all of us out in the world, struggling to hear God's voice amid the din and confusion. As one who's never really considered she had a calling to this vocation, I have come to be in awe of those who so early in their lives become aware that the world and its apparent advancements have no attraction to them, something most of us do not discover until we are at the latter part of our lives, even if we have been religiously trained, and sometimes people don't ever come to the recognition. We have always been dividing our time between the world and God's will. They knew from the first, these Carmelites, that they had a particular mission in how they would serve God. We all have a mission. Some of us don't ever know exactly what it is, though, as Newman says, there always is one. They discovered theirs from the first. The chapel is small, and to me, a child of the 50s and 60s, very much from that time, but so great a comfort for that throughout my time there. The altar rail remains. The altar is simple and lovingly draped with its linens, given an extra beauty on feast days. Every stained glass window is of an angel, and two portraits are on either side of the crucifix, one, I believe, of John of the Cross, and the other of St. Teresa of Avila, two most effective proponents of Carmelite spirituality. And the grounds, oh, trees of every kind, avocado and magnolia and many I did not recognize, grass and fountains next to statuary reminding us of the protection of the Virgin Mary and the staunch defense of the faith by the saints. I found my favorite places quickly, almost always by a fountain which soothed body and soul as I sought to engage in prayer, never easy for me with my hyperactive ways and distracted mind, and like all of us, a restless soul. My room even faced an avocado tree and comforted my somewhat continuing anxiety as I dropped off my bag into this room that did not lock from the outside, but only from the inside. Now there's something from days gone by. My window, which was long, was not unlike my window in my own bedroom here in Los Angeles, a tree outside there too, although I have no idea what kind and covers the whole of it. So, in this case, I felt just as I do at home, that I was ensconced in a treehouse when I was in there. So, in a strange way, I had something familiar. If I haven't mentioned this before, this Ignatian retreat was to be silent for the duration. But of course, there would be speaking at key spiritual events, for example, daily mass, in which we would of course participate in prayer. And each of us was assigned a spiritual director, who would meet with us each day for a half hour to discuss what we were experiencing spiritually, if anything, and gleaning from the points of meditation given by two priests and a brother four times a day. And we were urged to do 4 to 5 holy hours a day. That would mean that we would take the reading suggested to us upon which to meditate in a way that usually most of us don't either have time for or don't consider necessary. I'm one of those people. Okay, I've read it. Ultimately, we learn to place ourselves quietly and peacefully, as opposed to quickly and in passing, in the scenes of the Bible, and to discover that those scenes had every relevance to our modern-day lives. We would start our meditations, and then we moved on to contemplation at the very beginning of creation, including our creation, all the way through the introduction of sin, the crippling of our holiness because of sin, the life of God-man, Jesus Christ, who by being betrayed by his own creatures, modeled the way back to paradise and the reality and joy of his resurrection, which promises our own. I can tell you that I would discover a spiritual boot camp, and yet it was enormously profound. Best of all, there were the nightly 3-hour expositions of the Blessed Sacrament, and the opportunity always to go to confession.
The goal for myself and I guess for the other 52 attendees was to carry the experience and lessons of the 8 days into my daily life, the main lesson being that we were created by God out of an abundant love, and the way back to Him, now that we are reconciled by His sacrificial act in Jesus Christ, is through loving Him, which means serving Him, and the thing that we were taught as children, but somehow lost in translation, as our lives became encrusted with worldly ambitions and cares. So, the late afternoon of the 23rd, we were all registered, got our rooms, and were immediately referred to the refectory for dinner. That dinner would be the last time we would speak as a group or as individuals, so the introductions were quick. Many of the people already knew each other as they were from the same parish. There were few, like me, I would find out at the end of the retreat, from other parishes. In a way, though I can be very social, I was happy I would not be networking through the retreat, for that clearly would distract from the very essence of the effort to hear God in a way that only silence can promote. The brother who would become my spiritual director said that silence was an amplifier. Back in my room, awaiting our first conference at 7:45, once the great silence had begun, broken only by the chirping of the many birds, I began my journaling. I asked myself two questions. Can I be silent and still for 8 days? And will the Lord show me something that I will finally cooperate with in the long haul? Let me tease next week's podcast on my experience, which I rather hope will tempt you, in a good way, to consider a retreat if you haven't done one before, or another, if it's been a while, with a tad of the first conference given by Father Victor Nwabwese. And by the way, you can find these points of meditation conferences and the ones given by Father Ed Broom on YouTube by putting in Ignatian Retreat 2022 Ed Broom. The first thing Father Victor said, and which I heard long ago when I first came back to the faith, was that it was no accident that we were here at this retreat, and that God knew we would be here before we were even born. Then he spoke of the parable of the sower, and for us to consider and identify which seed we were and upon which ground that seed, our hearts basically, had fallen. Did God's word fall on hard ground where it could be taken away easily, blown away, taken by birds, or as Father noted, by Satan's sly temptations, on rocky ground, but taking no root, like a bout of suffering, short or long, means that we do not thrive spiritually. Okay, look, God let that happen to me. He lets things happen to me, so I can't believe in Him. What is our foundation? I look at myself. I have been immersed in Catholicism virtually all my life. Is my foundation such that His word and my response can take root? Some seed falls among thorns, and it gets choked. Different things in the world get in the way, whether it be sex, drugs, and rock and roll, my distillation of what Father said, or, you know, things like food and drugs and alcohol, technology, greed, name all the seven capital sins. In my case, I'd say it's pretty much anything to ask Jesus to be spared from in the litany of humility, which I highly recommend. What is it in each of us that prevents God's word from taking root? And the last, of course, is the seed falls on good soil that trusts God and lets Him work on us. Let me also refer you to what I came across as a companion to the litany of humility, or was referred to us. I think I had heard of it, but I didn't have a copy of it. Now I do. The more recently written Litany of Trust. Yes, Father concluded, it is no accident that you're all here. And he warned us that the enemy was not happy, and he would try to interfere with the graces being bestowed. I realized that in some way, all that anxiety that I had had before coming there, aside from it being part of my perpetual psychological profile, and the anxiety I had on the way there, and even while I was settling in, was exactly that, interference. I also realized that so much of my battle in life had been against that kind of interference. There was exposition of the Blessed Sacrament. The question that Father asked, or one of many, was, What must I do with his grace to allow God to reach me? I agreed in principle and in fact. This is God, the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ, the second person of the Trinity. But that was in my head, in my mind. Had I ever absorbed it? Have I ever absorbed him? In this podcast, I will share, and in the next week or two, we'll share some of what I wrote in my journal. And this is what I wrote that night. I lose connection in my inner being while appreciating the reality. I added, I really pray he allows me to want to embrace him with full recognition, body, mind, soul, and divinity of whom he is in the transubstantiated host. Time's a-wastin'. Well, I hope I've teased you with a little bit of interest for next week's episode, which will go more into the meat of my experience of the retreat. And perhaps it'll go into a third episode. I don't know yet. In the meantime, I hope that you've been enjoying these episodes of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. Tell your friends about it. I know that's kind of an odd thing when it comes to a Catholic program, because it's kind of a niche how many people are going to be interested in what it is to be a Catholic. But we share so much common ground, all of us, when it comes to the nature of struggling in this life and trying to find ways to make that struggle not just tolerable, but meaningful. See you next week.